You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
From Shakespeare to Schwartz, from Fosse to Alvin Ailey, from Sondheim to Bareilles, from McNally to Fay, it happened to the greats, it still happens every day. When lightning strikes, it's the moment you know. When lightning strikes, where you're meant to go. You can stand and shout Eureka, do whatever you like. You'll never forget the moment when lightning strikes.
Hi. This is Gerald Brunner, and you're listening to When Lightning Strikes, where we talk about the tingly, heart-stopping, mic-drop moments that led you to becoming an artist. Mandy Gonzalez is an Obie and Drama Desk-winning singer, actress, and author. She is so ferociously talented and has such a fierce belt that she was nicknamed The Beast. Mandy stars on Broadway in Hamilton as Angelica Schuyler and also originated the role of Lila Rosario in the Tony-winning Broadway musical In the Heights. Mandy played Elphaba in the Broadway production of Wicked and is also a Warner Music artist and released her chart-topping debut album, Fearless. She can also be seen as Lucy Locks in Madam Secretary. Mandy is the proud founder of hashtag Fearless Squad, a social media movement for inclusiveness and positivity, which connects millions of people around the world. This month, she released her first children's book, Fearless, about 12-year-old Monica Garcia, who goes to New York City with her grandmother to pursue her Broadway dream. Mandy, it is so wonderful to have you here. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be back and to be talking to you. So I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, let's talk about your lightning strikes moment when you knew you had to be an artist, or was it several moments your life?
I think it continues to strike because it all kind of started for me when I was a kid, you know, and I'm the youngest of three. And both of my parents worked full time, and I was very lucky on the weekends and during the week to be babysat by my bubby. And she would listen to Broadway cast albums with me and watch old movie musicals. And really, I was the only grandchild that liked them and would sing back with her. And she immediately, I think, saw that I had a love of music and I had a talent. And I don't come from a showbiz family. And so definitely lightning struck her at that moment, because she was like, she just went into the paper. You know, I'm from California. She went into the paper in Los Angeles and just looked for opportunities for me to perform. And we had this place called the Showboat Dinner Theater that was down the street from her house in Tarzana, California. And you could go and you could eat like a buffet lunch and see a show. So I remember going with her very often to the Showboat Dinner Theater with my brother, who also had to tag along for everything. And they had all-you-can-eat pickles at the Showboat Dinner Theater, and we both love pickles. So my brother was like, okay, I'll go. And I mean, he didn't have a choice. So we saw Man of La Mancha, and the woman that played Aldonza, Susan, became my first singing teacher, because my grandma went up to her afterwards and said, you know, my granddaughter has a talent. Do you teach singing lessons? Will you teach her? And she said yes. And so my grandma would drive me every week for singing lessons. And that's where my journey began. But it was that moment of having somebody that loves you and is like your first teacher encourage you. So it was that first moment of encouragement where I thought, like, oh, I get a lot of attention doing this, and I love doing this, and I just want to do it all the time. And so I felt very lucky to have that first lightning strike be one that was with my grandma.
That's so beautiful how your grandma was such a fearless warrior for
Absolutely.
You. Talk about fearless.
Yes.
And she just called, went up to this
Always.
Lead. Yeah,
my whole childhood was about How do I get my daughter, how do I get my granddaughter perform? And, you know, my mom didn't like going to a lot of the lessons because, you know, my brother did sports and things like that. So, and she didn't like having to wait in the waiting room because a lot of the parents do a lot of bragging and things like that. And my parents are both very quiet and it used to bother her. And so she told my grandma, my grandma's like, well, I'll go. I don't care. And my grandma, you know, she couldn't hear him anyway. So my grandma would go and find these places for me to perform. And, you know, one of those places was her, were my grandparents' living room, you know, like Mandy perform. Like if we, my grandma, her family was from Poland. My grandfather's family was from Romania. And all of the, her parents came over, I guess like in the early 1900s. And so my grandmother was born in the States and, she was born in St. Louis and they grew up in this small apartment and everybody was musical. Everybody could play a musical instrument. My grandma was the one that sang and danced. So at, when we had get-togethers at my grandparents' house, all of her brothers and sisters would come and my grandma would just say, Mandy, sing, like get up and sing. And so I would. And it really provided me with just a love of this craft and made me just want to keep doing it all the time.
It's so extraordinary. Do you remember one of the first times you performed on a stage outside of your...
I do. It was at that Showboat Dinner Theater. I played Bielka in Fiddler on the Roof. And I remember, and who does mama teach? Like doing that part. And my grandparents sitting at one of the tables and looking at them. So obviously I wasn't in the moment. I was just like living my life, kind of looking at them going, isn't this great? Like I'm in a show. But that's how it started for me at the Showboat Dinner Theater. That was my first time on a real stage where, you know, it was people other than my grandparents.
So it wasn't like in a school play, it was actually professional theater.
I guess at the Showboat Dinner Theater. Yeah. I don't think they paid us anything. I mean, they didn't pay me for sure. But yeah, it was working with a lot of adults and going, having to go to rehearsal, having to learn, you know, all of the things like tradition, learn all of the musical numbers and dances. But that was definitely my first time.
Is it hard to describe how singing makes you feel? Because I know how I feel when I listen to you, that ferocious belt, that gorgeous vibrato, you know, just it's magical listening to you sing.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So how does it make you feel when you sing?
I think that when I sing, I can go to a different place. First of all, the composers that write the music that I sing, I love telling stories and I love being that vessel that is, the one that tells the story to the audience. And so it's the lyrics that I look at first and the most, but then when I get to those notes where I can soar, it really is the closest I feel that I get to heaven, you know, that I get to now, you know, that my grandma's passed, I feel like it's the closest I get to her.
Did she get to see you in make your Broadway debut?
Oh, everything. Everything except Hamilton, because she lived a long time. She passed away on her birthday in 2019 at 97. So Hamilton was the only show that she did not get to see. But she saw every show. And when she would come and see a show, you know, because she couldn't get around that well, she would sit from the matinee to the evening show in the house. And the ushers would always let her stay. And she would become friends with everybody. Everybody loved my grandma. And she just loved it. She loved being in the theater. She loved being a part of it. And she loved going up and going to the other actors and telling them how wonderful they were, even though sometimes she didn't recognize them because of her, you know, she couldn't see that great, but she loved people. and she loved music. So anybody that did that, she wanted to kind of be around them.
That's beautiful to see the dream realize.
Yeah, here. Absolutely.
Starting with her being fearless, which brings me to this these delicious characters you've written in your book, Fearless. Tell me about what inspired this book.
Oh, gosh. So many things. I mean, the library was kind of my sanctuary as a kid. And I think a lot of writers will say that, it was the place you could go for free. And my mom would take us every weekend to the library and, you would get a library card and you just felt so important. And then I remember my mom would, drop my brother and I, we're a year apart, would drop us off in the kids section. And she would go into the adult section and she would say, okay, pick anything you want. And I just remember feeling like, anything I want, And she said, well, you got to give it back. But, having that moment of being able to pick a library book and having a whole new world open up to you, it was honestly, for my brother too, it was our favorite place to be. And it still is my local library where I live now. I'm constantly in there. Since the pandemic, it's not been easy, but bookstores, because I always find a new story that I can delve into and my imagination can just be taken away, which I love. And what really inspired me is, similar to the main character in my book, Monica Garcia, I had a love, like I was talking about, of music and performing at a very young age. And I lucked out because I had a grandma who loved Broadway. And so she introduced me to that world and through, cast albums and things that she could find that were tangible. And I remember constantly looking for characters and names that looked like mine. And I tell you, I didn't have a lot of luck. And it was so important for me to write this novel and to create stories so that young people can see themselves, to know that a life in the arts is possible. It is so empowering to see yourself in a story. And so that was really my biggest inspiration in writing this book. And then, as going along, all these treasures and people that I've met along the way, I've been working on Broadway for the past 20 years and I've loved every moment of performing, but it's really the stories and the people along the way that are the biggest part of your journey. And so being able to share that in my own way with young people was so exciting. I'm in the midst of my second book right now of writing. So I'm kind of like still, cause this is part of a series. Right now I'm signed for two books with Simon and Schuster. I can't believe it. And so, but now I keep going with these stories that I love. So, but really that was my inspiration. And, I just feel so lucky that it's out there.
I love Monica and I love her connection to her abuelita.
Yes, abuelita. Uh-huh.
Abuelita. And also how you bring us behind the scenes in a very unique way that
you
get an understanding of what happens. You're behind the footlights. There's that delicious character, Jimmy Onions, who I thought, is he? Tell us about that, because he's a legend.
Yes, absolutely. Jimmy Onions is inspired by Jimmy the Doorman over at the Richard Rodgers Theater, who has been a part of my life. When I started at the Richard Rodgers within the Heights, I can't remember what year we were there, maybe 2006 or maybe 2008. I can't remember when we started because we were doing off Broadway and then the reading and all that stuff. So sometimes my dates are wrong, but I remember going with my mom and walking on Broadway and saying, "Hey mom," because that's the thing when you start a new show that I got to put in the book, can we just go and see the marquee or see the theater, just to see that this is actually happening. And I remember my mom and I were standing in front of the Richard Rodgers for In the Heights. And Jimmy came outside and he said, you just want to come in? And I said, yeah, hi, I'm Mandy Gonzalez. I'm going to be in the show. And he goes, oh, I'm Jimmy, you know, and that's just who he is. He knows everything about anything that's happening on Broadway. I mean, he's been working the door at the Richard Rogers. I think he started as an usher, and then he's been working the door since he was 15. So he is the eyes and ears of Broadway. So I had to include him in this book. During Hamilton, I asked his permission, and I said, Jimmy, you know, I'm writing this book, and I'd love to include you in the story, and would you be okay with that? And his reaction is so great. He's always like, yeah, sure. And I was so happy because I went to see him after I did my audiobook in the city. I was like, let me just go check out the theater and see if anybody's there. And sure enough, I rang the bell and it was Jimmy. And the crazy part is that he goes, you've got a package. He's like, you've got a package here. And I was like, what? I haven't been there in over a year. And he remembered that I had a package under all these other packages. And he was right. I did have a package there. But at that time, we didn't have copies of the book. So I can't wait till I can go back into New York and hand him a copy. So I'm so glad that that young people are going to be able to fall in love with him as a friend, just like we all do.
Yeah, he's such an advocate for Monica. I mean, he's really in her corner. That's what's so beautiful is that she has all these people who in her life who are really rooting for her and her journey.
Yes.
And here she is brand new in New York. And
well, that's one thing that you don't know when you're coming to New York. You know, I moved to New York with a dream, and I posted a picture of it recently on Instagram, like with a dream and a pair of overalls, because that's what I was wearing when I arrived, you know, in Times Square. And I wear overalls a lot, but, you know, I didn't know how to do it. I had a dream, and I was like, I had, you know, the training from growing up, but you know, the thing that I didn't know was the family that I would build along the way, you know, not just my husband and my daughter, but my theater family. You know, every show that I've been in, somebody has completely changed my life and with their friendship. And so that's the thing that I miss, I think, the most right now, is walking down 8th Avenue and seeing friends that you haven't seen from all the different shows. But the character Relly is inspired by my best friend, Darrell Grand Moultrie, who started on Broadway with me in Aida. We were, he was a swing, I was a standby for Idina Menzel, and we were in the swing room together and we shared a mirror. And we became best friends by the looks that we would give each other in the mirror, by the things that people would say. And he has remained my constant friend throughout, my best friend. And, you know, when I was writing this, he had to be a part of it. And so it's kind of fun that we get to, in so many ways, that he gets to go on these adventures with me. Because he's always been right there with me in anything that I've done. And now, you know, he's done other Broadway shows since Aida. And now he's an acclaimed choreographer working with dance companies all around the world. And so for kids to see that character, it brings me so much joy.
That's so extraordinary. For people who don't know, you were one of the harlots singing with Bette Midler. Right?
Yes.
Is that how you... You once told me this amazing story about Stay at the Plaza Hotel, which I love. I love that story. Is that when you were first in New York? Is that how you first got to New York?
So I went to college in California. I wasn't really ready to leave home. I was very close to my family. And so I was like, well, I'll go. CalArts was in my town. And so I said, I'll go there. And so that way I can live at home and still be with my parents. And then, you know, when I was 15 years old, my grandma, I was with a different singing teacher that my grandma would drive me to. And that singing teacher connected me with an accompanist because I was starting to, you know, perform songs and things like that. That accompanist, it turns out, was the vocal arranger for Bette Midler's backup singers. And that accompanist is named Bill Schneider, and he's still in Los Angeles. And when I was 15 years old, my grandma figured out how I would be able to perform my own show at the Cine Grill at the Roosevelt Hotel. And Bill Schneider was the one who helped me put that show together. So he has been a part of my life ever since. And when I was in college, my first year, Bill called and said, you know, Bette's looking for new women for her show. Would you like to come and audition? And I said, yeah. And I didn't know that audition meant going to wait in line for 3 hours because it was for an open call. Like, so I went to the open call and I kept making the cuts. You know, I bought this really cute outfit from Capizio, and I, you know, I had to dance and I had to sing and I had to sing all three parts. I had to learn all three part harmony. And then I remember the second or third day of auditions, Bette came to that final audition, and I had to kind of do a sing off with another singer. We had to do like a high harmony on "Stay With Me, Baby," you know, ooh. And I was like 19, and Bette goes, "Can you do it, you know, a step higher?" And I said, yeah. And I did it. And then she had the other woman do it too, and she couldn't do it. And so I got the job, and it completely changed my life, because this kid that was always kind of afraid to leave home has lived the furthest, has been the longest away from her family of all the kids in my family. And, but that was the show that took me away. And we went to, New York, and we played Madison Square Garden, and we played the area, the tri-state area. And Bette always put us up in the best. I remember somebody from her band say, "It'll never be like this again." So just so you know, like, not with Bette, but just other people you work for, like, this is the top, you know, just appreciate it. And I'm so glad that he told me that, because I mean, I would appreciate it anyway, but it really did make me appreciate what, how she treated us and how wonderful she was. But she put us up at the Plaza Hotel when it was still a hotel. Yeah. And I was just, you know, this is where I want to be. And so I saved my money from that tour, and I moved to New York, and I moved to Brooklyn. I never stayed at the Plaza again. I hit the pavement, and I went to open calls. I didn't have an agent, and I was just like, okay, I'm gonna make my dream happen. And I worked really, really hard. So my first off Broadway production happened. I was working two jobs. I was working at Dean and DeLuca in the basement, packing groceries for wealthy people. And at night, I worked at this restaurant called Rain East on the East Side. And during the day, I would go to open calls. And I went to an open call for the Vineyard Theater for a show called Eli's Coming, based on the music of Laura Nero. And I ended up getting that job, and it really changed. That was another lightning strike. It really changed my life, the fact that they found me at that open call. And I starred in that show opposite Anika Noni Rose, Judy Kuhn, Ronell Bay, Wilson Germain Heredia, and Diane Paulus was our director. And so Doug Abel and Cindy Tolan, the casting directors at the Vineyard Theater, they honestly changed my life. And that was my introduction to Broadway. And that happened about 6 months after I moved here from California. And then from there, Disney Theatrical came to see that show. I won an Obie Award for that show, and they cast me as the standby for Idina Menzel and Aida. And then from there, I did Dance of the Vampires. That didn't last too long. So then they asked me to come back to Aida, but this time to replace Idina, and then to star opposite of Toni Braxton and Will Chase in Aida. So I did that. Then I went and I did Lennon on Broadway, and that didn't last too long. But in the midst of that, I met incredible people. We went to San Francisco. It was awesome. And then I was asked if I wanted to have a meeting with a young new composer who was writing a show about Latinos, and it was going to be starring Latinos. And would I like to go meet the creative team in the basement of the Drama Bookshop? And I had been to the Drama Bookshop. If you're an actor, if you're in the arts in New York, that's a place that you go, as well as the New York Public Library. And so I said, yeah. And I walked into the basement. I had known Alex Lacamoire from another project that I had done. And I met Tommy Cale and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Kiara Alegría Hudes. And that also changed my life, because they said, oh yeah, like come do this reading for In the Heights and play Nina Rosario. And I did. And then I kept on with that show. You know, they did a workshop, and then it went on to Broadway. And now, you know, when is it, in June, I guess, it's becoming a film that everybody's going to get to see. A whole new generation is going to fall in love with the music. And so, you know, that creative team has definitely played such a big part in my life, not just as people that I work with, but like family, people that I just absolutely adore and love.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What did you love about them? What did you love about
Well, the first time we did a reading of In the Heights, I remember Lynn standing up and saying, now I know you guys don't know any of the music, so I'm just going to sing all of it. And he started, and it was like, lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day. And I was like, who is this guy? And what is this? I've never heard anything like this before. I think that their ability to dream, their loyalty, and their artistry, I think that those are the things that, and their humanity, I think those things all play a part in their success, in their ability to create projects that that really can change the world.
And I love how the songs are so magical. And then with you say, you know, this, and the song, when I think of the song Breathe, and, you know, what a special song that is. And weren't you involved early on in Hamilton?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was. I was asked, I had given birth to my daughter about 2 months before. Lynn was putting together a collection of songs at Lincoln Center, like an evening of songs. And he wanted to do some new songs from Hamilton mixtape. At the time, I think it was going to be an album. And, you know, when you get that call from Lin-Manuel and Alex Lacamoire, and they said, hey, we're going to meet at Lack's apartment. Do you want to come and do it? I was like, absolutely. You know, I was like breastfeeding and all those things. But I went to Bloomingdale's, and because none of my clothes fit at that time. And I bought a dress, and I was like, I'm there. And I was the first person to sing Say No to This with Lynn, Mariah's song in the second act. And I just remember feeling like, well, first of all, I felt like I was home because I was with people that I adore. And I was also, you know, sharing the stage with Chris Jackson and just so many of our friends that had been along the journey with us. And so that just felt so good. And, you know, and then when I saw Hamilton at the Public with my husband, I mean, I was just in tears. I was like, they did it. This was incredible. And I remember when I first saw the show at the Public, and everybody would enter, like Chris made an entrance, you know, in that first song, Lynn made an entrance. I cheered at all the entrances because they were all my friends. And people would give me the dirtiest looks like, who are you? And why are you cheering? And I just laugh now because at Hamilton, that's really how it is. People cheer for all of those characters now. And but at that time, people were like, be quiet. This is serious. And, you know, but those were my friends. I was just so, so proud of them.
What was it like to take over the role of Angelica? And what do you love about her? She's such a force.
She is such a force. You're so right. You know, she, when I got the call from Tommy, which you never get those kind of calls when you're just asked to do a job, you don't have to audition. That was like, you know, I tried to play it cool and I was like, yes, absolutely, please. And it was just so exciting. You know, Renee Elise Goldsberry, who is a Tony Award winner and a friend, she did such an incredible job being the first one to stand in that character. And so I was just so excited. I was so excited to be part of it and to be part of this journey at this time in America. And I felt ready to be part of such a big, such a huge production, you know, and to be the big sister kind of the company that, you know, younger company members who were just making their Broadway debut, that I was happy to be that person that people could come to ask for advice or to just talk. That was one of my favorite things. Whenever I would get to the theater during the day, you know, people coming into my dressing room and just telling me about their day, and especially the women that played my sisters. I miss that so much. And I know that in my heart, I know it's going to be back, and I know that it's going to be better than ever. I think so much theater and so much art, I just have this feeling that there's just going to be this resurgence of art in the city. And I cannot wait for that. You know, my husband is doing a show at Miles McEnery Gallery. My husband's a painter in September. And so I just feel like that's a good time for people to get out and see art and see what's been happening, because artists have not stopped creating during this time. You know, like this, even, you know, we've learned how to adapt and how to keep going.
And yet, what's kept you sane? What's kept you going?
Oh, gosh.
During this time.
The thing that's kept me sane, honestly, is my family. Always. I think it's been very hard because I haven't been able to see my parents for over a year, or my sister or brother. But we do a Zoom call every Sunday to catch up. And that's kept me sane. And then, you know, my husband and daughter, my daughter has been homeschooled since the pandemic started last March, and her district has not been back to school. They're going to start this next week. But it's having that responsibility of, okay, you need to wake up for your child and make sure that they are taken care of and everybody's safe. And so I think that has kept me sane, and I've enjoyed, tried to look for the bright side of everything. And I've really enjoyed being able to have dinner with my family every night, during this time, because when you're an actor on Broadway, that's not a possibility at all. So, I've enjoyed having that time together.
And I love this movement you created, Fearless Squad. Let's talk about the hashtag Fearless Squad.
Absolutely.
And what was born from that. I mean, you have an album that was also in that vein based on your fearlessness and your parents. But what inspired hashtag Fearless Squad?
Well, you know, when I first started on Broadway, I would get letters to the theater from young people, as you did back then, snail mail. I would have time to write them back. And now with social media, everything is so immediate. And I always have my DMs open. I'm learning always. And people would write me, not just young people, but parents would write me, and with feelings of loneliness and needing a place to belong. And I felt so blessed in my own life to have a fearless squad that I call my own. And so I said, if you don't have a fearless squad, you can be part of mine. And I put out a hashtag, and I called it Fearless Squad. And I had no idea that hundreds of thousands of people would want to be part of that from all over the world. And it really shows you the power of connection. It shows you how reaching out and connecting with somebody can change someone's life for the better. And I had no idea that it would be me in the end that would need it the most. You know, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in October of 2019. And I was very private about it at first, as you know, as anybody that has been diagnosed with an illness knows, it's very personal. And I really came to the fact that I wanted to be public about it, because I continued to do the show. I continued, I took a week off. I had a lumpectomy, and I took a week off to have that surgery. And then when I came back, I couldn't lift my arm for the work pose. And I asked my stage manager, I said, well, is it okay if I just keep my arm down? And she goes, Mandy, you can lift your arm low and then medium. You just do what you can do. She was one of the only people I told. And then I decided in January, when I started chemotherapy, I had a hard time doing 8 shows a week. You know, I'll be honest with you, I could do about 5. And it really saved me, because I really wanted to feel a sense of normalcy during this process. I never wanted cancer to define me, but I also couldn't avoid that it was now part of my story. And I decided that I wanted to go public because I wanted to, my story, to help people, to educate them, to let them know that they're not alone, very similar to my message with Fearless Squad, and to let them know that this can happen to anyone. This happened at my first mammogram, and mammograms, getting tested is so, so important. And early detection can really save your life. And so I decided to use my platform for good. And I think that that has been a constant in my life. It's what I see from the example of the women in my life that have used the platform that they had with our family to do good in this world. And so I think that this is my part of my journey, but the Fearless Squad has been by my side through all of it, you know. And to have to go through treatment for breast cancer during a pandemic was not easy. It really sucked, but I made it through. And so I hope my story, and it's not just about, you know, making it to the other side. And, you know, we all have different stages that we go through when going through an illness, but it's about putting one foot in front of the other. And if I can do it, you can do it too.
It's so beautiful, Mandy. Thank you for sharing. My heart goes out to you. And not to be so dramatic, and how extraordinary that you're encouraging women to get mammograms, because I know you said that saved your life.
It did. You know, I went into the doctor. I had just turned 40, and my doctor said, well, there's no history of breast cancer in your family, but you're eligible to get a mammogram at this age. Is that something you want to do? It was a choice. And I was very lucky, because I said, yes, I want to have a mammogram now. And, you know, it turned out that they found a tumor. And, you know, I'm the first one in my family. And when I was filling out my genetic information for the doctors, I realized that I had a lot of information on my mother's side. That side is Jewish, Ashkenazi, and everybody kind of talked about different things, what they had. And not that they weren't private, but you just knew. I knew what everybody had. But on my father's side, my Mexican side, I didn't know. I had to call a lot of people and ask, has this happened to you? And to also let them know that this happened to me. Please let my primas know, my cousins know that this is possible. So make sure you get tested, because Latinas, the Latinx community, is so underrepresented in breast cancer research. So it's important that they know that this is very important. It's very important for you to get a mammogram any way that you can. If you feel something that doesn't feel right and you're below the age that they say is eligible, I've now met friends that were diagnosed in their 20s, diagnosed in their 30s. You listen to your heart and you go in and get a mammogram, because it can save your life. It doesn't mean it's the end.
That's right. Do you mind sharing that story about your parents meeting? I love that story. Yes. And how that inspired the beautiful song Fearless that Lynn wrote.
My parents have been married now 50 years, but my parents met as pen pals during the Vietnam War. They grew up, they both grew up in California. They grew up in very different kind of worlds, I would say, because my father grew up as a Mexican-American in Northern California. His family came over from Mexico and they followed the crop. They were farm workers. I'm the proud granddaughter of farm workers. And that's why it was so important for me to include them. That story also in my book, that Monica Garcia's family are farm workers. But my father's family settled in Northern California because my abuelito got a job as a foreman. My mother grew up Jewish American in the Valley of California, Southern California. And my father was drafted at 19 years old and drafted to Vietnam. And he was, you know, sent away from home for the first time on a plane, the first time away from his family to war. And my mother really wanted to join the Peace Corps. She was 17 and her parents said, no, absolutely not. And so she did the next best thing. She asked how she could help. And there was a program where you could write letters to soldiers who maybe didn't have anybody writing to them. And my father was one of those people. And they corresponded throughout my father's service in Vietnam and then his service afterwards in the National Guard. And then when my dad went back to Northern California after his service, he got in his car and he drove to my mom's house and he showed up on our doorstep. And my grandparents were like, what? Who is this man? And my parents instantly fell in love, you know, and, but because they were from different cultures, my Jewish grandparents were not very accepting of my father and that side of my culture. And because it was different and they were afraid, they didn't know, you know. But my mom said, this is who I want to be with. And they ended up eloping. And my mother, I remember she told me that she was like, I'm not going to go back and see my parents because they didn't accept us. I'm not going to go back. And my father said, as my father is a gentle person, he said, those are your parents and we're going back. And so I grew up never knowing any of this because like I grew up with a bubby. I grew up with an abuelita. Like I grew up with both sides of my family being very loving towards all of us. So I feel so lucky that they were brave to follow their heart, but also that that they changed the family by their love, you know? And yeah, they've been together almost 50 years, which is incredible.
That's incredible. And then coming full circle, your bubby is the one, right? That's yes. Your mother's mother, your maternal grandmother took you on all those auditions.
Exactly. And my father used to sing when he was younger, a teenager. He was in a band called The Enchantments, which I think is such a great name. And he stopped singing after he came back from the war. And then when he met my mother, he decided that he was going to sell his microphone and his amp because it was time he felt to get a job. And this is what the thing that he wanted the most was a family and my mother. And so, you know, without him though, I would never have this voice, you know, that definitely comes from him.
How extraordinary. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Is it hard to picture where you'd love to be?
I think like all artists, I think it's very important that when I finish a project, I'm always looking to see what I can do next, to what I can better myself at. So the thing that I would love to be doing, I think, in 5 years is creating stories and creating more stories and building projects for young people, whether that be through my books, whether that be on TV or television. The thing that's been instilled in me from a young age of I would love to see come to fruition in about 5 years.
Mandy, it's been so wonderful to have you on the show. Always a treat to talk to you and inspiring. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to see you perform me again live.
I'll see you on 8th Avenue. I'll give you the biggest hug.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. It still happens every day when lightning
strikes. It's the moment you know. The theme song was written by Tom McGovern. This episode was edited by Kyle Moore, and the talent was booked by Anna Stroud.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.